said that there was lots of Steveland, as if hurting him didn't matter. And as for Lucille and Marie. With forced calm, I said, I can speak for Steveland. He would like the opportunity to make a formal rebuttal and would like both the complaint and his response to be evaluated by the committee and by the people of PAX. This complaint deserves the utmost deliberation. This won't be quick or easy, and we urge the committee to act without haste. I noticed that CU had left the room. When? Why?
He wants to waste time, Cedar said. We need Steveland out now. He's not fit to be moderator. He should resign and save us a lot of trouble.
But he's not doing anything, the old hunter Orion said, waving at the blank talking stem. There's no reason to worry about something that's nothing.
How do you know what he's doing?
She said.
And the glassmakers, they don't belong here. They tried to kill us, and they'll try again, and they're eating our best food. We should throw them out.
A few beadies applauded. It was shameful. Daisy, thank goodness, exploded.
Throw them out.
She stood, arms outstretched, pleading.
That would be tragic. And after so much tragedy, how could we bear more? Steveland is so exhausted by what happened, he can hardly endure to speak.
She started crying, as usual, to add dramatic effect.
The glassmakers mustn't be sent away. We've worked so hard for peace, and now we have it.
Cedar was right about the glassmakers,
Abidi said.
Just about the orphans,
a green answered,
and they're all dead now.
Violet should have called for order, but she just sat there looking expectant. A wind had begun blowing outside, then developed into a faint chant, filled with whistles and buzzes. The sounds of glass made. What were they doing? Out in the streets again, scurrying through them like orphans preparing to attack? But the queens wanted peace, and they were smart enough to know they couldn't survive without us. We could trust the queens. But what were they doing? Daisy didn't seem to have noticed the noise.
Oh, how can Cedar even think of such a thing? These are our friends.
They're not citizens, Cedar answered. So we can do what we want.
Orion tilted his head, then tapped Carl on the shoulder and made some hand gestures that hunters used to communicate. Nye and Violet exchanged little smiles. Others began to listen to the chant. Cedar wasn't listening. She said,
Peace. Talk. People like you are going to drag this whole process out until something awful happens again. Let's domesticate them. And look what happened.
The sound outside grew louder, became a tune, and split into harmony.
Glassmakers, Orion announced.
They were singing, but nothing like the horrible songs they had used to harass us. This was a sweet lullaby by old Uncle Higgins. It surrounded the meeting house, one part of the harmony on the west side, another at the north addition, constantly moving and changing. Cedar looked wild-eyed from one side of the room to the other. Violet had closed her eyes with eyebrows raised like they were riding a dream. Nye frowned, concentrating. The melody split again into more harmonies and grew louder. The lullaby about a gentle snowfall that had soothed us all as children, but it reminded me of drums and singing at night, of trying to sleep during the siege and, because the glassmaker noise was keeping me awake, worrying hour after hour about how much worse things could get. but I was awake, in the meeting house. I had clutched my pen so hard that the reed tip was broken. The song ended the reverse of the way it had begun, with harmonies coalescing and regrouping, and then the melody faded away into the wind.
"That was beautiful,"
Violet said. Cedar stared at the floor. Hathor and Forrest nudged each other, lips pursed. Orion sat still and smiled. I inspected a scratch on my finger from a reed splinter. The glassmakers walked in, the queens leading their families up the center aisle.
"That was beautiful,"
Violet repeated. Everyone applauded, except Cedar and her followers, of course. Steveland remained blank. The queens knelt on all four legs and lowered their heads, and their families repeated the gesture. The air smelled like roses. Cedar asked,
"What was that about?"
"Now, Cedar,"
Daisy said. She was well past her crying spell.
"The glassmakers sing to honor our dead,"
Nye announced.
"The harmony divides and moves apart to indicate lives leaving us, and then they join to show that the lives become treasured memories. They offer their condolences and their thanks for everything, for their chance to live in the city again."
"That was beautiful,"
Violet repeated again.
"On behalf of all of us, thank you. And thank you, Nye."
She looked around.
"So is there anything else? I don't think so."
"My complaint," Cedar said. "But you won't consider it. We have to treat Steveland nicely. We have to humor him. We have to defer to him because
without him, we have about as much chance to survive as the glassmakers did."
Daisy snapped.
"Oh, why can't you see that?"
Violet looked around the table.
"The committee will accept the complaint, right?"
No objections. Technically, unfortunately, none were possible. She looked at Steveland's stem, still blank, and she said something else, but I couldn't hear her over the din of voices, everyone with something to say about the meeting, the music, or Steveland. The glassmaker song hadn't changed many minds. I visited Steveland the next morning, bringing Red Dog tea, bread, and a piece of his fruit, feeling achy although I had slept well, or at least I thought I had slept well. He was speaking before I had time to sit down.
"I have spent significant time over the past few days meditating, which was why I have been quiet. I have tried to imitate human existence by isolating groves to experience your viewpoint, although isolating my viewpoint in my humor route offered insights of doubtful utility."
"I'm glad that you're feeling better." It was about time he started talking.
"The world offers many surprises when one is a small individual, because concentrated awareness is highly sensual. The glassmaker's music last night caused emotional changes for my isolated grove. How did you react?"
"I remembered other music. Counselors had told us that grief caused unstable emotions."
"Beauty is a link among glassmakers, humans, and myself. The beauty of their architecture and music shows that we regard the world more alike than unalike. These similarities make our mutualism a joy and a satisfaction."
I looked for a pen and paper. "Let me make a note of that for our reply."
"We must participate in each other's beauty. I will make a request of the committee. During the orphan attack, I identified a need to make sounds of warning. I would like a voice perhaps even the ability to sing.
A singing plant.
My humor root suggests that I am becoming more like an animal.
And if he were burning again, he could scream. I tried not to imagine it.
You were right not to allow me to resign. The complaint says that I am patient and timid because I am rooted to one spot, but I can act aggressively. Moreover, I am a dominant species, and it is my nature to dominate. Each of us needs to be what we are, perhaps even more of what we are. If we are true to ourselves, we will help our best natures flourish.
The bakers had boasted that the morning bread had been made by the glassmaker apprentice, start to finish. I bit into it, and it could not have been more tender. Does this mean you won't resign? That was a relief. A big change. Troubling, actually, because he had changed so fast.
I was wrong to wish to resign, as Cedar's complaint has helped me see clearly. I owe the citizens of Pax my best. She has physical and psychological injuries, but not scarlet fever brain disease. I checked while she was being treated in the clinic. Cedar can be befriended if I apply mutualism with sufficient rigor.
I don't think she wants to be your friend. And I think she's a serious problem. She has followers.
Befriending her does not mean emotional compatibility. It means removing her necessity to fight. She is a valuable member of Pax, and we must redirect her aggression to a suitable target, such as an ecological threat. She has provided leadership at decisive moments despite her recent failures.
You know, your mood has changed a lot since yesterday.
I have isolated my emotional imbalances in particular groves, so each grove can work toward balance, leaving my major operational roots more able to deal with immediate problems. One imbalance wishes the orphan attack had not happened at all, so I have centered it in the roots of the grove that the orphans burned, where the reality is most undeniable. Does that seem reasonable?
I suppose, I said, but I couldn't parcel out feelings here and there. I had learned that long ago.
However, I am still sorrowful. Higgins sang a song about grief evergreen. It is a rich metaphor. When your wife was killed by Coral, was it like losing an arm or an eye?
I didn't want to talk about that. But he needed my help, and that was my job. Yes, more than an arm or eye. I lost decades of time, our future together.
Have you not grown another, correction, healed, since as an animal you cannot grow a lost body part?
I had been at the top of the bluff when the boat came back from the Coral Plains, the boat Bess had taken in a trip upriver. Her traveling team lifted her out of the boat, her stiff corpse like a log wrapped in her blanket, and at a glance I knew what had happened. And I turned and ran back into the city, everything void. No, I merely adapted. I can't replace her.
Please elaborate about replacement.
I thought I had made myself clear. Some people change partners like bats changing roosts. One is as good as another, but Bess, I can't replace her. I don't want to replace her. No one could be like her. What I did was continue to love her even though she isn't here. After several moments, he said,
"We plants keep the Venatorus coral out of our forest to protect you, but we cannot control the plains. I am sorry that Bess died. Others had esteemed her for her kindness, and observing her, I learned much about the idea. It may be that Cedar wants to keep an enemy the way you want to keep Bess. But by my balance, it is better to maintain love than hate. Is it easier?"
"Yes." Bess had kissed me and left, and the next time I saw her face, she was in a funeral basket. And for a time I had thought I had lived a day too long, not realizing how much more I would love her after losing her. During Lucille's funeral, for the first time, I felt glad I had not traveled upriver with Bess and seen her die. "Yes, she was kind. Thank you." But he was wrong about Cedar. An enemy kept the blame off her, and that was why she wanted one. I looked at the angle of the sunshine on the roof. I should go help with the orange trees. Water and sunshine.
"They are enemy trees. I am sorry for more killing, but I hope this will be the end of slaughter. The locust wood will help. Warmth and food."
Erasmus, the senior lumberjack, sized up the volunteer work team, about 20 of us plus a dozen cats playing leapfrog while they waited. A large team, considering how much else needed to be done, but a small one, considering how much people hated the orange trees. Erasmus was Generation 4, tough and square as a brick, although a wispy beard and white fringe of hair somehow made him look frail. He nodded in approval and turned to size up the orange trees, tangles of slim, supple trunks, each unable to hold much weight, so every branch sent down a dangling root that eventually became another trunk. Big green leaves, veined in black, made the trees look dark and hulking, and thorns like arrowheads studded the trunks and branches. Ugly trees. Guilty trees. Another chance to fight the orphans and win using a normal, everyday PAX work team. An emotionally charged work team. A team ready to finish the destruction that the orphans had started. One woman already sniffled tears.
"It's like this," Erasmus said. "Suppose we start cutting at one side and work our way through. The trees'll tip and fall on the logger. We have to chop branches as well as trunks, easier to say than do because of the thorns. We'll need ladders. That's the reason we don't harvest them often. Locust wood, now there's a tree that's a pleasure to cut down. Cooperative, too."
"Why don't we set fire to them?"
said Fabio's father, a man deep in his suffering, axe in hand, fondling it, dreaming of worse things to do. He turned to me.
"They got your son, too. How about it?"
"I'm only here for justice," I said. "Fire." I was trying not to remember fire.
"Fire,"
Erasmus said.
"Not a bad idea, and I like the sentiment. The thing is, the fire would hurt other trees, like that ponytail over there next to the oranges, those pines, even these friendly little palms. No, wouldn't be right. Good thinking, though."
People nodded. It wouldn't be the PAX's way. Peter stood next to me. The downy hairs on his upper lip had darkened in the last year. He had loved Lucille, and he would have been blind not to, the only grown woman in Generation 7. She had been his future, and she had died before his eyes. Could he heal? Or could he replace her? If I talked about Bess, would he understand? Did you paint your face green to be like Lucille's? I asked. He looked away, fumbling with something in his pockets.
No.
Then?
Yes.
In a louder but not stronger voice, on the edge of a squeak. That's a nice gesture, I said. He nodded and tried to smile and failed utterly. Maybe we could have saved Lucille. Did he need to know that? Cedar had refused to act, but then pacifists arrived, fought, and almost won. Almost. If the fighting had started a minute earlier, maybe. No. The orphans already had the acetone. They already had a plan to burn the women to distract us. But Cedar hadn't known that. Could I forgive her? Would that be good for Pax? Would that be just? Peter was suddenly hugging me.
Take care of yourself,
he said, as if I were the one needing care. He turned and left down the path, whistling in something like Glassmaid, and two glassmaker majors followed him. They'd bring back locust wood saplings to plant in place of the oranges, and the locust woods would hunt and kill any remaining orange tree roots. We fetched ladders and got to work, one tree at a time. I held a ladder for Fabio's father and tried to hold it steady, but he chopped wildly. Long swings with more force than precision, almost knocking himself off the ladder, though he didn't seem to notice. He couldn't notice. He was attacking in his own private battle, and how could I not sympathize with the loss of a son? Tears or sweat filled the fine lines around his eyes. I kept my feet planted firmly, my eyes on his swinging arm to know when to tense, listening to the rhythm of other axes and the crunch and crackle of live wood yielding to steady assault, and to sniffs and sobs and relentless progress making way for good trees. Fabio's father swung the axe at another branch. A glassmaker would have hacked like that, axes and clubs swinging at the end of long, sinuous arms. All around me, axes opened up bright, orange, raw wood, too much like blood-red flesh. The morning after the battle they had found Osbert's body, his head smashed open, thrown into the thistles, on a day with so many dead that we didn't have enough funeral baskets and buried them in bare soil.
Are you okay? Bartholomew, are you okay?
Fabio's father was talking to me. Fine, I'm fine.
Do you want to chop for a while?
No, thanks. I'm good down here. But was I where I ought to be? The fight was over. We had won. The orphans were gone, and the surviving glassmakers wouldn't turn on us. But Cedar could turn on them, and they could lose their last chance to survive. I had more important things to do than kill trees. I checked in the kitchen and several workshops and found Cedar in the meeting house. All the doors were propped open.
I am pleased to have a chance to speak with you,
Steveland's stem already said when I ducked in, probably addressing Cedar. She looked up from a law text.
Keep the doors open,
she told me.
Steveland isn't going to put anything in the air to control me. Only the committee can vote out a moderator, right? But we vote for moderators. Everyone votes for them. Why can't everyone vote a moderator out? That's what they did with Vera, right?
I sat down across the table from her. Take away her need to fight, that was what Steveland had said. No, take away her ability, that was it. I didn't know how to begin, but now would be the time, and no time to be tired or let my mind wander. We can all count, I said. The committee supports Steveland and the glassmakers. Most citizens support them, too. you'd lose in a vote.
Not by much,
she said, then turned to Steveland.
That's what you want, isn't it? You win, we all lose. You get to stay in control.
I do not wish to fight you,
he said.
I forgive you for letting Lucille die.
She turned red and opened her mouth, teeth bared, ready to explode with denial. I didn't give her the chance. The first rule of argumentation is to appropriate the argument. No, Steveland, you won't forgive her.
You cannot tell me what to do.
I can tell you what you ought to do. First, forgiveness isn't that easy. Second, she doesn't want it.
I don't need it,
she said. A few people, attracted by our arguing voices, peeked into the meeting house, unsure if they should listen. I gave them a nod to encourage them to stay. I would need witnesses, if I could figure out what to do.
I can forgive,
Steveland said.
Because I understand killing. I did not wish to make Sylvia kill Vera, but I did.
Sylvia did that back in the old village, I said. You weren't involved. Two people already sat on benches halfway toward the front. A few more lingered near the back, while another leaned out, gesturing at others to come.
What actually happened is a secret passed on by moderators,
Steveland said.
You are not a moderator, thus you do not know.
I pointed to the document bureau. The facts are in the old record book, there for anyone to read. The book had been written by a record keeper named Nicoletta.
I have the knife Sylvia killed Vera with,
Steveland responded.
Lucille told me that Sylvia had killed her, and Lucille forgave me because I had not wished to make her kill. Thus, I can forgive others.
What are you talking about?
Cedar demanded. The people on the benches, a lot more now, looked perplexed. I tried to unravel his logic or his emotions, but I couldn't. I'll get the book. Where's the knife, Steveland?
It is beneath the paving tile next to Harry's waltz box. It is steel, and it is from Earth. It has been passed down from moderator to moderator, but as a secret.
Cedar rose as fast as she could, limped over, and knelt to pry up the stone. I climbed on a chair and pulled down Volume 2, bound in worked leather and dusty. I hadn't looked at it for months. Cedar stood up, holding the knife vertically like a bouquet of flowers, a shiny, silver-gray metal blade. 2 dozen people sat on the benches now, with more arriving fast. I turned to Steveland. Let's see if this account agrees with the story passed down to you. There's a paragraph here among the notations about births and deaths and such, written about 5 years after the events. It says, the parents knew about Rainbow City, but thought that the rainbow bamboo would be worse than snow vines. Sylvia and Julian was a young man, Sylvia's first husband, I think, discovered the city and wanted to move the colony here. A few glassmakers arrived. Cedar stood near the upturned tile, knife in hand, looking every minute more like her old self. I continued, trying to think and talk at the same time. The record says that to suppress the idea of moving the colony, Vera, who was the moderator, had Julian and Octavo, the rulemaker, killed. She had Sylvia attacked and hurt, and she had several people beaten. It concludes, Sylvia killed Vera during Octavo's funeral and declared herself the moderator. She was actually underage, only a teenager. That was the revolt. There was a vote, but only the votes in favor of Sylvia were taken. The room was quieter than it would have been if it were empty. "Steveland," I said, "is this the story as you know it?"
I did not know that Vera had killed other pacifists. This changes Sylvia's culpability.
Indeed. Sylvia had to protect herself. However, Cedar had a chance to try to save Lucille and Marie during the orphan attack, but she did not.
"That's not true,"
Cedar said, waving the knife, perhaps unconsciously.
"We were outnumbered."
"Bartholomew's account is again correct,"
Steveland said.
"You were hiding beneath one of my groves, so I was able to observe. As Bartholomew suggested at the time, you only needed to create a diversion, and you said you would get killed doing so. At the time, I believed you were afraid."
"I was not."
"Now," I said, facing the audience, "to forgive, first we need to understand what happened. Sylvia was in danger and she protected herself. During the orphan attack, Lucille and Marie needed help and Cedar failed to act. If she wasn't afraid, then what motivated her?"
"I..."
She stared at the knife in her hand. People began to do more than murmur. Violet had arrived, and I looked at her across the room, hoping she would realize she ought to keep order. She marched to the front, faced everyone, and said,
"We're eavesdropping here. Let's be quiet and listen."
It was a counterfactual order since I was addressing the audience directly, but it seemed to work. "If you weren't afraid," I said, "then what? We have two models for behavior. Sylvia acted for the good of Pax. Vera acted to retain power. Allowing Lucille and Marie to die did not help Pax, but you have long felt you should be moderator. Allowing Lucille to die would be a step toward acquiring the moderator position for yourself, rather like Sylvia, but..."
"No, I didn't want her to die. I was afraid. I was afraid of the glassmakers. And I was right. Look what they did. Lucille didn't know how to defend the city. They caught her and killed her. Marie made mistakes from the start of the mission. Steveland, he didn't know what to do."
"I have made many mistakes,"
Steveland said. I didn't wait for him to list them. "You were afraid then. Would we all have done the same? We can forgive acts we would have committed. Many of us were afraid that night. Many of us hesitated. And we all made mistakes. Some big, some small. Some made no difference. Could we have saved Lucille and Marie? The orphans already had the acetone and planned to use it. Cedar could have tried to rescue them, but she would have failed." Her eyes snapped up to meet mine.
"Lucille would have died anyway?"
There was relief in her voice. "Maybe. That would change everything. That needed to be confirmed. You thought that she died because you had failed to act."
"There were so many orphans. I didn't know what weapons they had. I..."
She paused again, looking down at the knife, at the floor.
"I didn't know what to do. I pretended I was brave, that it didn't matter. But you said I couldn't have saved them. I didn't like Lucille, but she was the moderator. I wanted to save her. I did.
She had run out of words. "I understand," I said. "You hesitated out of fear, an error we all could have made." She nodded, still looking down. My own emotions were slowly shifting, but I hadn't undertaken this effort for my emotional benefit. People had begun to talk among themselves again, which was a good sign. You were afraid, and you hesitated, I summarized one more time to make sure everyone understood. Had the situation been different, Lucille and Marie would have died because of what you failed to do, but in this case, their death was certain regardless. I turned to Violet, sitting up front. What shall we do? She blinked a few times.
This isn't a proper meeting, so we can't do anything. We'll need to think about all this.
Let's get back to work,
Hathor said, disgusted. Could she forgive Cedar? No, she and Forrest never forgave anyone. People stood up to leave. Cedar threw the knife down on a table and began to limp out, but she looked back at me, less smug than usual, maybe even ashamed. Not murderous. Not more likable, but that wouldn't matter anymore. I could forgive fear. She left. I sat down at the table and pondered Steveland's talking stem, now blank. He had said he wanted a voice. He had wanted to remove Cedar's ability to fight. He had wanted to understand grief. He had wanted to become balanced again. A few fellow Greens came up to the table.
Thank you,
one of them said.
This is going to help a lot,
another said. They did not seem triumphant. Good. It had to be done, I said.
And you didn't hurt anyone,
yet another added.
That's the way to do it.
I looked at them, old friends, companions in joys and sorrows and whatever the current moment was. Hollow satisfaction, perhaps.
We'll be at dinner when Lux sets. See you.
I nodded, and one of them patted my shoulder as they left. By then, only Violet remained. She walked over to the upturned paving tile and began to set it back in place. Steveland, I said, what should we do with this knife? He didn't answer right away, and for a moment I was worried that I had sent him back into silence. But then he said,
I believe it belongs in the museum. You were right not to allow me to forgive. It is more complex than I had believed. I attempted to balance emotions with facts, yet the weight of emotions seems hard for me to estimate.
For us, too, I said. Even our own emotions. Sometimes they gain or lose weight over time. I suddenly remembered the smell of truffle in the meeting house, a long night keeping the glassmakers calm, and no sight of my son, Osbert, none at all. But we all knew without saying what had happened to the guards on the wall and what might happen to us.
You should get some rest.
Violet had sat down and taken my hand.
You know, you could be moderator.
I tried to imagine Sylvia as a girl, as a new underage moderator. Someone who wanted to do more than survive, but so did the parents, obviously, by the expectations written into the Constitution. Aspirations to joy, love, beauty, and community. They had thought they had to leave Earth to achieve them. Were they right? Steveland wants to sing, I said. Violet raised her grand eyebrows. I tried to imagine Earth, and I couldn't. I tried to imagine writing a history of Pax, and there was much that I would never know. Too much. Yet it needed to be done. I could start with what I knew and what I could learn so our story could survive, so we could discover our true selves. Our future would be another discovery, or, if we understood how we had arrived at where we were, it could be a choice. I stood up. It was time to get back to work, back to the business of living, back to a life that would slowly seem normal even if it was never the same again. Violet stood too.
Look what I found,
She held out a little mesh basket and a cactus the size of a thumbnail floated inside. Sky blue underneath, brownish green on top, bristling with long white thorns.
It's an Astrophytum echinocactus ceruleus.
She pronounced the words carefully.
These are common and they get big, a meter across. But they're camouflaged and high flyers, so we don't see them much. This seedling sprang a leak, and that's why it fell. Leaks can be fatal, you know.
The danger from leaks is susceptibility to predation,
Steveland said.
With your protection, it will recover.
Oh, I'll take good care of it, like all my cacti.
She took my hand.
Let's go. Water and sunshine, Steveland.
Warmth and food.
Under a sun close to noon, the city seemed different. Or I was different. Less damaged. The house closest to the meeting house had remained untouched during the attack, and its roof sparkled. I paused to admire it, and Violet stayed with me, her warm hand in mine. Glassmakers had built that house, one of the few that had survived entirely intact over the centuries and disasters. They had made those glass bricks with internal air pockets that acted like facets, a technique we had never quite mastered. Thus, deliberately, the roof flashed color. I had seen it every day of my life and enjoyed it often. Had marveled at it from inside and from up on the walls, and now from down on the ground again. Steveland told me beauty is a link among all of us, I said. A love of beauty for us, for him and the glassmakers. Will that be enough?
It's one link, but I suppose we'll need more. What do we have?
She tugged on my hand.
What keeps us?
She led me past a garden that had also escaped untouched, studded with flowers that would become fruit and seeds in time.
We came from somewhere else, and we came here. Both of us. We both wanted to be here.
She had taken me in the opposite direction from the front gate, where fire still scarred the stones and Steveland. Her path avoided other destruction as well. I soon realized she could do so with ease. We had hurt each other more than our surroundings.
Glassmakers farmed too,
she added. Yes. When Sylvia and Julian came here, they found the remains of fields.
They've already been very useful in the fields now, the glassmakers. They'll help us a lot. And technology. They had technology. It's in the museum, isn't it? They can help with that, too.
They don't seem to remember much, I said. But they have a history, too. They did, and it shouldn't be forgotten. I could see to that. I had another project, or rather I had a single, bigger project that would unite us a bit more. We turned a corner and paused as people filed past on their way to or from work. Still in old clothing, but with the occasional new headscarf or a string of beads. A man said something beyond our hearing, and everyone around him laughed. Violet held up her caged cactus.
I should take this to put it with the rest of them.
I need to make some tools, I said, and suddenly realized something. We'll need some tools made specially for glassmaker workers. Shorter handles and maybe smaller overall. I'll need to talk to them about it. I released her hand to go to the workshop outside the city, where there was room to stack logs and lumber. I'd need to pass through the main gate. I stopped. No, I didn't want to do that. A lot of us still hadn't yet. We'd been leaving through the west gate. I'll go with you to the plaza, I said. Then I'd head through the west gate and take a long, circular walk outside the city walls. But at the end of the day, I'd walk back in through the main gate. I would see destruction, but from a different angle, and already somewhat repaired. A new view and a new memory. Steveland had said that in the roots below the gate, his wish that it had never happened was fighting with reality. I didn't have that problem. Around me rose his bright stalks and graceful leaves, the curves of their boughs echoing the curves of the roofs. I had water and sunshine, and warmth and food. Some shards of broken crockery lay at my feet. I'd have a long chapter to write about the meeting of pacifists and glassmakers, yet it wouldn't be the last chapter, or the longest. "Do you really think I could be moderator?" I asked Violet. Someone had to do it, and I knew what it would involve. I had seen it done well, and I would leave the knife in the museum. No longer a secret.
This is Caitlin Davies. We hope you've enjoyed this production of Semiosis by Sue Burke. Post-production by John Marshall Media. Text copyright 2018 by Sue Burke. Production copyright 2018 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.